Windy City Queer Cast.
Gays and lesbians are all the rage.
We're here and we're queer.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
We're talking mega gay.
Ooh, I like that.
I'm Amy Matheny.
This program is brought to you in part by American Airlines, offering exciting GLBT vacations online at aa.com/rainbow.
And Miller Lite. Triple Hops Brewed Miller Lite. Taste greatness. The Windy City Queer Cast, show number 455. I'm Amy Matheny, and I'm hanging out on my couch with one of my favorite homosexuals, the fabulous Scott Duff.
You forgot handsome.
Handsome and gay.
And gay.
And talented.
Oh.
And delicious.
And delicious, yes.
Mm-hmm. And all of these things and more we will talk about. But I'm thrilled to have you on the couch. You know, Mitchell Fain was like, you know, Scott Duff should just take over for me when I'm on a cruise ship. And then you said, I'm jetting up to Chicago.
Yes, because I leave.
Jet.
The jet-setting life I lead. Yes, it's true.
You hopped up from Memphis, Tennessee.
Yeah, all the way from the Mid-South.
And we should say, just for people listening, Scott and I have been super close friends for over 12 years.
Yes.
Xena fans would know that Scott Duff was in both Xena's at Xena Live
shows.
Yes,
I was the Sorceress and then in the first one and Androgyny in the second.
Yes, originated Androgyny. Gave us all a lot of sass for that. And then Scott and I were in a fantastic play by Patricia Kane called Seven Moves, which was her big debut as a playwright.
Yep.
And you, of course, have done tons of shows with About Face Theater.
Yeah, I think I've done about 13 plays with About Face, as well as a whole bunch of, like, worked at the Goodman and
yep.
Steppenwolf and Chicago Shakespeare, all over the place.
Yes. So he came to town for a number of, you know, some work stuff and also to see my show, to come to see Enron, which we
have
gosh.
Now
okay.
been open. You have got to go and see this. If you were in the Chicago area, run. Don't walk to go see Enron.
I really just have him here to do this plug.
It's
really,
true. It's true. It's true. Yeah, and I would be saying this even if Amy wasn't my friend. It's really good, and it will get you really, really pissed off.
Like, yeah.
By the end of the play, I'm sitting there. I wanted to yell at that man. So like
the Jeff Skilling,
character. I'm sitting like you suck. I hate you. And it's because of you that we're in this such a mess right now.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
But it's fantastic. It's a really smart play, wonderfully directed. The transitions, the use of the ensemble is fantastic. All of the leads are wonderful, and it's go see it.
It's but, funny too, right?
I mean, oh yeah.
What
yeah,
I love
yeah.
is that people don't think they're going to come to a show and laugh or be amused, or that there's so much irony, and it's not all irony that's bitter irony. You know, there's to me it has a bit of the wit and banter. You mentioned Aaron Sorkin, like the speed
oh,
of television
very much. Yeah.
writer. You know, who wrote West Wing and Sports Night and.
But he also did A Few Good Men and
right?
An American President. And
right. Right. Yeah, and but it also to me, you know, has kind of a bit of the language is almost like a modern day Wild or Coward or just kind of the clip and the wit is smart wit, but it's funny.
Yeah, it felt kind of like an American Stoppard. But it was written by a British lady. It is written
by a British young gal. So, yeah. So it's, we're up and running, and hope people will come and see it.
Yes, go check it out.
We're running for a while, yeah. But, you know, they sell out, and people don't wait and think that you'll see it in March or April. Like, go and see it in February because...
Absolutely. And it's a perfect thing to do when it's so gross and cold out.
Yeah, come in our theater.
Go we'll in. Be cozy get cozy, warm, and
watch a good show. Exactly. Get steamed up.
Mm-hmm. It's a good thing with the Republican debates going on, too.
Oh, God. Really? It's like, I mean, this is going to be interesting now through the end of the year. And, I mean, right now we're only getting one side of it. And I guess this is the more interesting side of it because then Obama just has to go toe-to-toe with whomever.
With Pumpkinhead. It's going to be Pumpkinhead. You know
it's going to be Pumpkinhead. Is Romney what you call Pumpkinhead?
No, Newt. That man is like all swolled up. Like,
you think it's going to be Newt?
I think it's going to be Newt just because he's so...
If it's Newt, we're so out of the clear. It's so easy.
It's so easy. But like, A, they're not going to have a Mormon.
No?
No. No, they just won't. They're just too preoccupied with like... You kind of like Jesus, but you wear special panties. Like, it's the Southern people that are really going to mess up with Mitt.
Yeah.
And, they're
and
just
you're
gonna
living
love,
in the South
yeah,
now,
I'm
so
living in the
you
South
have
right
a
now.
Vantage
and
point.
People love Newt because he's got that bravado when, like, he just will tell, you know, during debates, like, well, I want to ask you about this. Do you want to answer? And he's like, no, but I will.
Yeah.
You know, like, there's this weird sort of, like, swinging dick sort of thing going on with him that I think people are gonna like, but he looks like he just got stung by a bunch of bees.
Yeah,
you know,
he's a bit swolled up.
He all swolled up.
It's funny because I watched, you know, because I am an Oprah lover, and I'm watching Oprah's Next Chapter, which are these interviews where she goes to people's homes. This is on her own network. And you know, some of the programming on there I really enjoy. And it's been interesting, like, to watch her go to Steven Tyler's kind of almost lakeside country home where he lives all the time. And he grew up in outside New Hampshire. And, you know, she's just gone to a lot of different interesting, I mean, whatever you think of him. I watched her interview Joel Osteen, which was just really fascinating. I mean, he doesn't dislike us gays, but he thinks we're sinners. But, you know, okay, sorority da, so did my dad when I first came out to him.
Right.
So it's all, you know, people can change. But,
Sorry. Something to say.
Go ahead.
I was a high school teacher when I was, for 4 years when I was living in Memphis.
Yeah.
And actually, one of my students just sent me a Facebook picture from the Chicago Gay Pride Parade. And it was Christian supporters.
Oh, wow.
That were holding up signs. It was this, it was, of course, this man, a very attractive man wearing nothing but some panties.
Right.
But he was being hugged. And their sign says, you know, Christians who apologize for how the church has treated you.
Oh, wow.
And
there are a lot of church groups that march now.
But I thought it was also kind of cool with what you were
with
saying.
With your student,
And that my student said that to me. He's like, another reason to love Chicago.
Aww.
So
they all know you're going to move back up here.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so... The interview that I watched this week was Governor Chris Christie from New Jersey. And, you know, he's a big guy, too, physically big. You know, he's the brunt of a lot of fat jokes. And we have had him a lot, you know, since he's been in office in our news. Kirk and I will, you know, read a news story of Chris Christie. And he's been on our side, you know, a lot. And we have him actually have had him in the news the past couple weeks, just with some appointments he's made of openly gay, you know, GOP, you know, Republican people working in positions that he, you know, puts people in those positions to work. But I found him really fascinating. I didn't realize how much energy tried to get him to run for the Republican.
Oh, yeah.
And I guess I was just kind of a bit unaware of that. But I think he's going to be somebody who will run in 4 to 8 years.
Yeah.
And based on what happens. And I found him really compelling. I really, really did.
Well,
you can talk about, you know, not really
talker.
Swinging his dick, but I mean, just, yeah, no bullshit. And really taking politics to a place like we need a lot of those people on both sides of the table to be like him. And I just found him really interesting. I was like, oh, I've been doing all these news stories on you. But that's why I think, you know, one-on-one interviewing is so interesting, is because now he is fuller person to me. You know, I can't just capsulize him in a soundbite or a news story.
Right.
Like, I feel like I get a little bit of why he is who he is.
He's an interesting one. You know, you like Oprah. I love The View.
Yes.
And Whoopi Goldberg hates him.
Oh, interesting.
Hates him.
Interesting.
So it'll be, and I trust what Whoopi says.
Yeah. Well, I'll see. I might need to listen to some of Whoopi, but if he, you know, I can't, it would be real, I'd be really hard pressed to vote for a Republican for president.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know. I'd have to have some big psychic changes in 4 or 5, 8 years, but who knows?
Who knows? It could happen.
It could totally, totally happen. Well, I want to talk about a hot news story that we have not discussed last week or this week. And so it's not going to be in our news because Scott and I are going to talk about it right when we come back. But we're going to tell you what else is going on in the GLBT news, in the theater scene. And then Scott Duff's going to be back with me, and he'll wear one hat while I talk about this hot topic. And then we're going to have to introduce his persona, the improvised chef,
yes.
Because we haven't talked about food much on this show in 450 shows. I haven't talked about food, and I love food.
I love food too.
But it is time.
Well, it is, but most of the time, like, gay people think food is a bump and a Tic Tac,
and
that's a dinner.
That's not for me.
That's the gay dinner. Not for me either.
Okay, we're going to talk all about it.
I'm Kirk Williamson.
I'm Amy Matheny.
And this is The Week in News. The U.S. District Court for the Northern District of California rejected the federal government's request to dismiss the constitutional claim of gay and lesbian state workers who, together with their registered domestic partners, are excluded from equal access to California's long-term care program. Dragovich versus CalPERS involves a class action lawsuit challenging federal and state laws, including the Defense of Marriage Act, that regulates state-sponsored long-term care plans.
The White House Office of Public Engagement will partner with key departments and agencies to host a series of conferences around the country, specifically focused on LGBT Americans. From February to June, these conferences will provide grassroots leaders, community organizers, advocates, students, and others an opportunity to hear directly from the administration.
In Maine, gay rights activists launched a referendum campaign to legalize same-sex marriage. Equality Maine had more than 105,000 signatures to be presented to the Secretary of State's office. Only 57,000 signatures are needed to get their question on the November ballot.
The pro-LGBT group Minnesotans United has raised $1.2 million to fight Minnesota's anti-gay constitutional amendment. The figures include donations from more than 5,000 individuals, including the father of Governor Mark Dayton.
The Trevor Project announced the selection of its new executive director and CEO, former West Hollywood, California Mayor Abby Land. She succeeds David McFarland, who served in an interim role since April of 2011.
A group affiliated with the Anti-Gay American Family Association is criticizing Macy's supposed support of marriage equality. A Macy's catalog mailed to new customers shows a wedding cake with two groom figurines on top.
In Tennessee, Knoxville restaurant owner Martha Boggs kicked GOP State Senator Stacey Camfield out of her business for her anti-gay comments. He said Camfield, sponsor of the Don't Say Gay bill in Tennessee, said that it was virtually impossible to transmit HIV via heterosexual sex and that gay people die at a younger age.
An openly gay Arizona state lawmaker will enter the race to fill the congressional seat vacated by U.S. Representative Gabrielle Giffords, the Democrat of Arizona. Dr. Matt Hines, a staff physician at Tucson Medical Center and a member of the Arizona House of Representatives from the 29th District in Tucson, said he's politically similar to Giffords. A primary election is April 17th, with the general election June 12th.
After more than 50,000 people signed a Change.org petition urging DynCorp International to protect gay employees from harassment, the U.S. defense contractor announced it is adding sexual orientation and gender identity to its workplace non-discrimination policies.
GLAAD is asking the LGBT community and allies to tell JCPenney that the company made the right choice in selecting Ellen DeGeneres as its new spokesperson. The call for support came after 1millionmoms.com, a project of the American Family Association, told its supporters to call the retailer and demand that the company replace DeGeneres as its new spokesperson because she's a lesbian.
In San Diego, California, a second African gay man is facing deportation to an anti-gay country. Bekley Aigbusa, 28, left Benin, Nigeria 17 years ago. He has a February 28th hearing that will probably determine if he is to be deported. Joseph Bukombe, who left Uganda, faced deportation but was recently released from federal detention.
Out Magazine is publishing a series of letters that James Clementi, the older gay brother of the late Rutgers University student Tyler Clementi, wrote to his younger sibling. The brothers apparently came out to each other just months before Tyler committed suicide.
In world news, Stuart Milk, the nephew of the late gay activist Harvey Milk, joined the United National Association Westminster Branch and the International Lesbian, Gay, Bisexual, Trans, and Intersex Association in addressing the second chamber of the UK Parliament of the House of Lords during a policy summit on human rights abuses.
In India, more than 2,500 people took part in the 4th Mumbai Queer Pride. The march was the highlight of a week of celebrations that included dancing, stand-up, films, music, all part of Queer Azadi Mumbai. The march started with spontaneous speeches and took an hour and a half walking through central Mumbai to the beachside.
In Berlin, paramedics who answered the call of a suicidal man found the dismembered remains of another man scattered around the apartment. Officials believe the distraught caller was a sex partner of the victim, Karsten Schrock, and believe that Schrock was killed for sexual pleasure. Schrock's limbs had been expertly carved off with either an axe or a large knife. The head was partially cooked.
In Scotland, a jury unanimously found gay teenager Craig Roy guilty of Jack Frew's murder in 2010. Roy admitted causing the death of the gay student, who was found with 20 stab wounds and his throat slashed, and to having a sexual encounter with Frew.
In entertainment news, Matt Bomer, who stars on TV's White Collar in the upcoming stripper movie Magic Mike, is in talks to appear on the show Glee as the brother of gay student Blaine, played by Darren Criss. If so, Bomer would be the latest guest star in a season filled with celebrities such as Ricky Martin, Gloria Estefan, Pitbull, and Dini Leaks.
Sarah Jessica Parker will take over the role of feminist icon Gloria Steinem from the ailing Demi Moore in the film Lovelace. Moore was slated to join the biopic of 70s porn star Linda Lovelace as Steinem, but officially dropped out after reportedly checking into rehab. Amanda Siegfried portrays the title character.
Openly gay Bishop Gene Robinson has said that he'll officiate lesbian actress Cynthia Nixon's wedding to education activist Christine Marinoni in May. Nixon, currently earning waves in her role in the Broadway show Wick, was the subject of controversy recently for saying that for her, being gay was a choice.
Legendary actress Shirley MacLaine is joining the cast of the British period drama series Downton Abbey for its third season. MacLaine, 77, will play Martha Levinson, the American mother of Elizabeth McGovern's Lady Cora Grantham. MacLaine will butt heads with Dame Maggie Smith, who portrays the cynical Dowager Countess Violet. The second season of the critically acclaimed series will conclude February 19th.
Since splitting from his fiancée, Chaz Bono's bad luck in the dating scene has him contemplating being the star of a Bachelor-like reality series. Producers have reportedly approached him about doing a dating-type show, and he is all for it. But Cher is advising him against the idea.
Coleman Domingo, known from Windy City Queercast and the Logo series The Big Gay Sketch Show, is co-starring in playwright-director Altho Fugard's work Blood Knot. The drama launches the Signature Theater Company's new home on West 42nd Street in New York City. Opening night of the play about two biracial South African brothers is February 16th.
MTV and Logo announced that Dan Savage, syndicated columnist, author, and co-creator of the It Gets Better project, and star of MTV's upcoming series Savage U, will anchor a 60-minute It Gets Better special. The show will air on MTV and Logo Tuesday, February 21st at 10 p.m. Central Time.
And talk show host Helen DeGeneres challenged First Lady Michelle Obama to a push-up contest on her show. Obama didn't disappoint, as she quickly did 25, much to the surprise of the host. "I just stopped," the First Lady said, hinting she could have done many more. DeGeneres said, "I thought it wouldn't be good to show up the First Lady, so I stopped."
And that's the Week in News, brought to you by Windy City Times.
Let's go to the
I'm Richard Knight Jr., and here's your Night at the Movies Minute. Glenn Close first played the character of Albert Nobbs, a woman passing herself off as a man working as a waiter in a hotel in 19th century Dublin 30 years ago in an off-Broadway production. She's worked on getting a film version made ever since, and it's thanks to her tenacity that the movie has finally arrived. On one level, Albert Nobbs has the typical pleasures of all upstairs-downstairs type stories. like the current raid to Downton Abbey. The servants gossiping about their wealthy persnickety employers are, in this case, the guests of Morrison's Hotel, the small, fancy residential inn presided in which Albert works as the head waiter. Albert observes the goings-on, but keeps to himself. Then, with the arrival of Hubert Page, played by Janet McTeer, who works at the hotel temporarily as a painter, and who accidentally learns Albert's secret and then reveals his own, he too is a woman posing as a man in order to make a living, the movie deepens, and so does Albert's life. Albert becomes fixated on the idea of taking a pretty maid at the hotel as his wife. His enlarged fantasy and further plot complications then set into play a tragedy that takes on lyrical proportions as it reaches its conclusion in the adaptation co-scripted by Close and Irish novelist John Banville. Both Close and McTeer's performances are easily dismissed as acting tricks, made or broken by their ability to convince you of the reality of them as men rather than drag king impersonators. Within the context of the movie's period in which appearances and one's station in life really could deceive, however, it's easy to believe these women could fool the world around them. McTeer has a much flashier, more memorable part and is, as usual, a pleasure to watch. But there's a lot to be said for Close's willingness to remain within the parameters of her character. The close-mouthed Albert, with his huge interior life, is a psychological cousin to Heath Ledger's Ennis and Brokeback Mountain, and Close's work is no less sensational than his. Other elements, all under the direction of Rodrigo Garcia, aid Close in beautifully realizing her dream of bringing the multi-layered Albert Nobbs so vividly and entertainingly to life. I'm Richard Knight Jr., and that's your Night at the Movies Minute.
Hi there, this is Deb Pierce reminding you it's okay. Go ahead. You're not alone. Post a comment.
Culture Club. Culture Club. Culture Club. Theater.
Music.
Dance.
Art.
Performance.
Provocative.
Hilarious.
Exciting.
Weird.
Innovative.
Campy.
Edgy.
Original.
Get some culture in your life.
Join the club.
For the week of February 6th, 2012, you are in Chicago's Culture Club. Don't miss The Caretaker, Harold Pinch's classic comedy of menace, playing at Writers Theater through March 24th. Director Ron O.J. Parson was named one of the best directors of the year by WBEZ for his work on the production, which has been called riveting and unforgettable by audiences. For more information or tickets, visit writerstheater.org. The Caretaker is a play that will have you talking for hours after you leave the theater.
The Joffrey Ballet ignites Chicago in winter fire with groundbreaking works by the world's hottest choreographers. William Forsythe's In the Middle Somewhat Elevated stretches classical ballet to its modern limits. The Tribune called Christopher Wheeldon's After the Rain a heart-stoppingly beautiful creation. And don't miss the sumptuous beauty of Wayne McGregor's Infra, a U.S. premiere. Joffrey Ballet's Winter Fire at Chicago's Auditorium Theater, February 15th through the 26th. For tickets, visit joffrey.org.
Lily Tomlin is a versatile performer, comedian, writer, and social activist. Tomlin brings her iconic monologues and new multimedia aspects to her performance, with clips especially compiled to satirize her celebrity and showcase her classic characters in their renowned roles. Two performances at the North Shore Center in Skokie, both on Saturday, February 25th. For tickets, visit northshorecenter.org.
When Claudia left Ian and her old life in adult entertainment, she thought she'd found a new start. But when Ian shows up on her doorstep weeks before her wedding to Trick, the local youth minister and man of God, everything is thrown into turmoil. Welcome to Hesperia, where everyone has something to hide. Visit writerstheater.org for more. Hesperia is playing at Writers Theater now.
Join River North Dance Chicago at the Harris Theater on Valentine's weekend, February 10th through the 12th. A red-hot lineup, including two world premieres. Don't miss Love Is. For tickets or information, visit harristheaterchicago.org. Special celebration Saturday, February 11th. Following the performance, enjoy a festive post-show party with the dancers and delicious artisan dessert and drink pairings. There is no better way to showcase just how much you love that special someone. Party tickets are only $25. And for more Culture Club, visit WindyCityTimes.com.
This is Sharon Gless, and you're on the Windy City Queercast.
L-U-V, Madonna, Y-O-U, you wanna?
I see you coming and I don't wanna know the name.
L-U-V, Madonna,
I see you coming and you're gonna have to change the game.
Y-O-U.
with Scotty D, Scott Duff,
Hello.
On the couch here
Thank
in
you for having
Chicago.
Me.
It's so much fun.
That's
and,
great.
You know, if you're up here more often, you can do this more often.
Well, I will be up here more often.
Maybe we have a regular segment with the improvised chef.
I think so. Yes, we'll do the radio cooking show.
Like, we can do the radio cooking show, the podcast where you don't really get to see anything.
It's true. It's just like delicious dish on NPR.
Exactly, exactly. But I want to talk really quickly, speaking of dish, this Cynthia Nixon story, I think you probably don't listen to anything queer if you haven't heard this whole story. But, you know, Cynthia Nixon was being interviewed. Why? Because she's doing a play where she shaved her head and she's getting lots of attention. You know, on Broadway, she's doing the revival of Wit. And there was this New York Times Magazine article, and it came up about the fact that she's had this midlife switch of, you know, she was married for many years to a man, you know, started a family, and then, you know, divorced her husband and has been with a woman now for a number of years. You know, is you know, now been a huge advocate for the GLBT community and has spoken at rallies and has really shown up,
yeah.
You know, because I think one of the interesting things is, you know, if you were living as a hetero accepted mainstream person and then you switch when you're 40 to living a gay lifestyle, there's this whole new awareness of like, wow, what the thing you haven't been looking at or really considering
yeah, yeah.
from an insider's perspective that you're inside of. So, and there's been all this controversy because, as people are saying, she has, she said in this article that she considers her sexuality a choice, which has inflamed many a GLBT person and activist because now they're saying, you know, even John Aravosis, you know, he said, now we've just, you know, we've given people fodder, you know, fodder for fire, the religious right. And he says, you know, every religious right hate monger is now going to quote this woman every single time they want to deny us our rights. Because if we're not born this way, if this is not something we can't choose, that it is who we are, then that has been the argument for our civil rights. You know, when we try to align ourselves as a community with different religious or racial groups, as we've looked for housing non-discrimination and healthcare and hate crimes and all of this. So let me just read what exactly she said and then let's us discuss. Okay. She was talking about people finding it disingenuous, her midlife switch and sexual orientation. And she says heatedly, I totally reject that. I gave a speech recently, an empowerment speech to a gay audience, and it included the line, I've been straight and I've been gay and gay is better. And they tried to get me to change it, and they said it implies that homosexuality can be a choice. And for me, it is a choice. I understand that for many people it's not, but for me, it's a choice, and you don't get to define my gayness for me. A certain section of our community is very concerned that it not be seen as a choice, because if it's a choice, then we could opt out. And I say it doesn't matter if we flew here or we swam here. It matters that we are here and we are one group. And let us stop trying to make a litmus test for who's considered gay and who is not. Her face was red. Her arms were waving. As you can tell, she said, I'm very annoyed about this issue. Why can't it be a choice? Why is that any less legitimate? It seems we're just ceding this point to bigots who are demanding it, and I don't think they should define the terms of the debate. I also feel like people think I was walking around in a cloud and I didn't realize I was gay, which I find really offensive. I find it offensive to me, but I also find it offensive to all the men I've been out with. So, you know, and I don't think she wants to define herself as, you know, as bisexual. She doesn't, because she's living with a woman right now and she's committed to a woman. So
she's gay.
Considers herself gay or lesbian.
Right.
And we should say that our editor and owner and editor, Tracy Baim, wrote a great article to the Huffington, or editorial to the Huffington Post about this, because, which was really, really, really amazing. But, you know, what do you think? I mean, what do you think? Because I think this also has to do with gender. And I think that's going to be an interesting part of the conversation, because most of the people that I hear who are so upset about it are mostly men. I think that men maybe know at a different age. And I think there is more fewer
yeah.
men that would have this experience or find it at this time
and
age.
Well, I don't know. I think I disagree with you
okay.
on that one. I think the thing that's... That the biggest problem with sound bites and stuff is that things are taken out of context.
Right.
I mean, if you really look at it in terms of having, of this being gay is a choice.
Right.
Well, if you look at it, well, she said that she has been with men. She has lived as a straight woman. She was married to a man. She had children with a man. And then she chose to be with a woman.
Right.
And I think there is some, there is validity to that. There are so many people, especially in the South, who are gay, who choose to live a heterosexual lifestyle.
Absolutely.
You know, and I think there's a lot of stuff with society that there is pressure for you to be, live that heterosexual, go the straight and narrow path.
Right.
There are people who actively, who choose to live the gay style, not to say that they are choosing to be gay, but it's they are actually choosing to be honest with how they are feeling at that time in their life. And I think it, there is some level of choice in terms of like, I'm actually, I'm being truthful to myself. I'm honoring who I am and I'm brave enough to make this decision for my life.
Right.
Because if, you know, think about it. I mean, if we didn't have the, you know, the chutzpah or whatever, or the parents that loved us as much, I could probably, you know, be married to a woman, you know, but I wouldn't be happy.
Right.
You know, I wouldn't be fulfilled. And so it would be one of those things, you make a choice to listen to your heart and to follow what, how God made you.
Right. Well, and I also hear for her that she is kind of, and I don't know that she's saying this exactly, but to me it kind of sounds like she's saying, I fell in love with a person. This person happens to be a woman. Because this person is a woman, therefore I'm seen as gay, and therefore I don't have civil rights. So therefore I'm fighting for civil rights with this group of people because I now love a woman.
Yeah.
And so, you know, for her, whether or not if this marriage or relationship, I think they're married, this relationship, you know, they grew apart, you know, Heidi Klum and Seal were with you.
I know. I can't believe
that. Demi being rushed off to the hospital. Oh, I mean, everybody, Demi. I mean, just, you know, what the heck? But, you know, I mean, she obviously loved her husband. She had a child. You know, she loved the years that she was with that man in her life. You know, if that for some reason came to some full, they surrendered that relationship, her and her current partner. You know, I don't know that she's saying that, like, I'm lesbian now and I would only want to be with women. I think she'd forever be changed and she would probably continue to fight for GLBT rights, having been a part of that community. But I really think it's, you know, I don't think it's her responsibility to speak responsive. I don't think she's speaking irresponsibly. I think she's speaking truthfully and telling her story, which is the only story she has to tell.
Right.
She can't lie and go, I was a closeted lesbian.
Well, and that's the thing that also kind of drives me crazy, too, is that when we've got these public figures that all of a sudden, if they're speaking their own truth, if she's talking about, look, this is what's true for me, all of a sudden they are now the figurehead for an entire community.
Well, and we're trying to tell her how to tell her story.
Right.
Who are we to not give her the dignity of her own experience, her own story, which might be, I loved a man for 10 years.
Right.
And I went to PTA, and I hung out with probably more heterosexual couples, and I, you know, and I liked gay people and loved gay people and would have donated to gay causes, but I wasn't in the middle of the gay cause. Now I'm with a woman. I go to PTA. You know, I am now seen a different way. I give to GLBT causes. I'm in the middle of it. So I'm fighting for that, you know, more diligently. Like, that, her story is her truth.
Yeah. And the thing, too, is like, you know, this whole, I think taking away any sort of power of what she has done, like in the past, to forward, again, going back to The View, there was a time when she, you know, she was just, she was on there, and she, I forget what, why she was on there, for some Sex in the City 2 crap, whatever, which is, sorry, that was a horrible movie.
Yep.
Well, actually, I didn't see it. But anyway, I just couldn't.
I heard it was horrible.
But the trailer was horrible. But she was on that couch, and she was talking about her partnership. What's her partner's name?
Like Christine.
Christine or something.
Marinoni.
Yeah. And they were talking about, well, are you and Christine going to go to Hawaii to get married or to whatever? And she's like, no, we're not going to get married until we can get married in New York.
Right.
And she's, you know, she was like, and I'm fighting to get marriage equality passed. Well, look, marriage equality has passed now.
Yeah.
I mean, there are so many
things. She's lent her voice to that.
And she's lent her voice to that. She, on a national platform.
Yep.
To a bunch of suburban housewives and Scott Duff who watch The View religiously. I hate that I watch it.
Well, you know, but I think that it's, I mean, I just, I just think we have to be really cautious when we want to disenfranchise people who are trying, you know, to try to be a part of us. And if we try to create a whole new category for the Cynthia Nixons of the world, many of whom don't have the name, the clout, the platform that Cynthia Nixon has, then we're really going to minimize our movement and our fight for equality. Because really, and I've been saying this since 98, 99, 2000 when I started being on Lesbi Gay Radio, you know, we need the straight community, and then whatever this, you know, if we're going to see Cynthia Nixon as somebody who has knowledge of living with full civil rights and now having them denied later in life, not right. like, you know, I wasn't thinking about some of the things that I would need at 18, 19, 20, or now even younger, 12, 13, 14. We're not thinking of like, my partner's dying and I need to be able to, you know, call the shots, or I've got a job and I don't want to get fired. Like, we're in high school, or we're trying to survive high school or college or whatever. But, you know, to have that for 20 years of your life as an adult and then have it taken, you know, it leave you based on who you love is a different situation. I feel like I've never had it. Like, I've never had the opportunity to get married.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? The way I would to a woman, where she did. She had a period of her life where who she loved, she got to get married to, you know, with a man. So I just think, I think what I'm saying is that, like, we need our straight allies. And so I just don't want us to marginalize or disenfranchise somebody who's telling their own story. I think our story as a community is extremely diverse.
Absolutely.
If it has to be everyone's Lady Gaga's.
We keep adding initials to the end of that thing.
Yeah.
Like LGBTQ.
Pretty soon everybody will be involved.
LMNOP.
That's exactly right. But we can't all be born this way.
Right.
I mean, look, I know people, you know, definitely a lot of my gay male friends are like, I knew when I was like in the third grade, fourth grade, 10, 11, 12.
Yeah.
You know, I did not. I dated guys, you know. I dated your boyfriend.
I
dated your boyfriend for a long time. You know what I mean? And I genuinely loved, was attracted, had fun. You know, and on whatever level you're thinking of a future, I don't think I was thinking like marriage and kids and perpetuity. But, you know, I was genuinely in those relationships. I wasn't not in those relationships at that time, you know. So I think I came out later. And there are people who come to it whenever they come to it, you know. But nowadays, I think my story is maybe more rare because I think to it in high school and younger.
But
now,
I think it all depends where you are. Again, I live in the South.
Yep.
You know, I know somebody who just divorced his wife because he's gay.
Yeah.
You know, so it's one of those things where, you know, I think, again, it goes back to that choosing to live that life.
Yeah. But he's been in denial. Like, I guess I would say that I don't know. That's the thing I think. The only reason I can connect with this is, like, I don't actually think I was in denial.
You were just kind of doing...
I just, you know, all I had seen modeled was being with guys. And I obviously picked a gay guy for most of that time, which I didn't know. But it was a male. I mean, you know, gender-wise, it was a male. And
Yeah, but he's pretty, so it was kind of like...
He is pretty. He's pretty and soft.
He's soft.
He's got softer lips than most of the women I've ever been with.
He
really does. Oh, it's so cute. So yeah, we're sitting here. We could share stories. That would be scary.
We shouldn't do that. No, we
can't. But anyhow, so you know, Cynthia Nixon. I hope you battle the fire, and I kind of love the fire in her belly around it. And I am glad that you're saying, damn it, I get to tell my story, and you don't get to tell me how to tell it. And I agree. We do not need to, lower ourselves, the lowest common denominator of bigots and people. I don't want to live my life in fear. So if the reason not to speak my truth is because I am fearful somebody will turn that around and use it against me or use it against my community, I don't believe that's a good reason to
Amen,
not.
Sister.
So Cynthia, I got your back, girl.
Cynthia, we love you.
We got your back, and we don't mind that you got a bald-headed pate.
No, I kind of want to lick it.
I know. So speaking of licking it.
Yeah, so good. What? That sounds so gross.
Well, I don't know. It's Dish. We're going to talk food.
All right.
Your other persona, which we know you're an actor. You're a fantastic comedian and improviser. And you started, I've known you for years, and I guess I've always seen you around restaurants and kitchens because, you know, actors and theater people are often waiters and around kitchens and restaurants and food service. But you started this blog. You started cooking and then started this blog, The Improvised Chef. And I was like, oh, my God, like, Scott's a real chef. Like, I mean,
well, I'm not a real chef technically.
Well, I don't know what that is. I mean, well, you have a certificate, right? I'll make you one. But I'll have Hank make you one, actually. It'll be fancier and the handwriting will be cleaner. But talk to me. What is The Improvised Chef? How did this come about for you?
Well, this whole thing is, like, as you were touched on, like, as an actor, I spent plenty of time in restaurants.
Right.
And, you know, whenever you're slow or whatever, like, new specials are coming out, I'd always be like, well, how do you make that?
Mm.
You know, I'd spend a lot of time in the kitchen just, like, watching the chefs and doing whatever. And then when I moved from Chicago to Memphis, I kind of jumped out of my comfort zone and was thrust into this place where I didn't know anybody. So I watched a lot of Food Network, and it just began to play around in the kitchen. And again, I worked, like, in a really great Italian restaurant down there, Bari Ristorante. Mm-hmm. You should go check it out.
In Midtown.
In Midtown. Very authentic, like, southeastern Italian food, very specific. Lots of fish and lots of fresh vegetables. And I was introduced something to, you know, because when you think Italian, you think, like, lasagna and the meatball and all that crap. But I found out, like, oh, there's different, like, Mediterranean ways to prepare stuff. So I just started playing around. And truthfully, it was one summer when I was teaching and I had the time off. I was had a lot of time on my hands. I wasn't doing anything creative. And I'd always been cooking. And as I was over the years, I've gotten pretty good at it.
Mm-hmm. So I have definitely been the receiving end of that.
Well, thank you. So what I started to do, I took one of my friends, our friend's Jill Seitz.
Mm-hmm.
She had a blog going, and I was reading it. And I'm like, well, why don't I do this? So I started The Improvised Chef. And the whole basis is
about... And it's a Blogspot, right?
It's a Blogspot. It's actually theimprovisedkitchen.blogspot.com.
There you go.
If you want to go there.
We'll link it in our show notes.
There you go. And
what's the purpose of the blog?
The purpose of the blog is to share funny stories, talk about food, to give recipes. Mm-hmm. And it's all about to inspire you to get into the kitchen and play around with your food. Because some people... I'm amazed at how poorly people eat. And I'm not just talking about, like, unhealthy. I'm just talking about how they don't know what to do.
Yeah.
You know, or they don't even, they're scared of, you know, people see jicama and they're like, what? I can't, what is that? You know?
Is that?
What is that? Especially in the South.
I love jicama.
I love
but
jicama
I don't,
too.
I only get it in a restaurant. I've never had it in my refrigerator in my life.
Well,
see,
you
I'm scared
do that.
Of it.
I know. Well,
maybe
you're
this
not,
weekend,
and you're not
weekend.
A big. Cooker.
No, I'm not. I'm an assembler, though, and it's a salad food, so I can assemble it.
Yeah,
I just don't even
absolutely.
Actually wouldn't even know how to draw a jicama if I had to.
It looks like a potato. It's like if a potato and an apple had a baby.
Ooh.
It'd be jicama.
Okay.
Jicama Jones.
Jicama Jones.
That's going to be my new name.
Jicama
Jones.
That's your drag name.
That's my drag name.
So what? Where did the title The Improvised Chef come from?
Well, because I was an improviser in Chicago for a while and kind of I've always had that whole spirit of play going along. I decided to, like, well, let's do that because I'm not really a chef, you know, so I'm kind of playing
at it. You
have
to stop saying that you are a chef.
Well,
you don't run a kitchen.
I don't run a kitchen. But so, you know, so it's one of those things that I just decided to start playing around. So I'll get an ingredient and I'll see, like, three different ways to do the ingredient. Or I will go out to dinner and have, like, oh my gosh, this is the most amazing dish I've ever had. How can I do that at home?
Mm-hmm.
And how can I make it mine?
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of it is just going and taking different recipes and playing around with them and seeing how that it's just yours.
And that's your philosophy? Because, I mean, I know with improvisation, I mean, the basic principle of improv is what? I mean, and
well,
how is that? How does that parallel you in the kitchen?
It's... Well, for me, the whole thing is, like, know your basics.
Mm-hmm.
Like, with improvisation, you need to know that have basic tools. You need to have an incredible sense of play.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of what it is. It's like once you learn kind of the basic principles, you want to say yes.
Mm-hmm.
you know, and try everything, mm-hmm. and then add on to it. So it's, you take a recipe, you look at it, you're like, okay, this is great. Now how can I take it and make it better, or mm-hmm. change it or alter it? Mm-hmm. You know, you get one suggestion for a scene, and then that scene can go in 1,000 different directions. Mm-hmm. The same thing is with food. Mm-hmm. You get an ingredient or an idea, and then you just kind of go off with it.
Well, and I have to say, like, I look at your blog, and I don't watch any cooking shows. I have turned cook people that I know onto your blog, who do I know love to cook and are always like, oh my God, this recipe's great. Or, but as somebody who is, I think I am scared. I'm scared, and it's not my passion. My passion is to eat. I love having friends right. like you. I will take you to the grocery and buy you all the cheeses and stuff you want. You know, I'm happy to like open my pocketbook and go, right. okay, great. And I'll sit in the kitchen and pour your wine and make little drinks. And, but I know there are so many people who are in my camp and also people who are in your camp. And what's great about your blog is that I really feel like the recipes are, I can follow them, and I feel kind of inspired when I try some of them to like get better at it. Like and you coming to my house and making like a scallop dish for me, you know, I'd never made scallops, and I love scallops.
Right.
I mean, they're can be costly, but they're so great. You don't need a lot of, you know, you just need a couple of good ones. And, you know, and so I haven't really perfected it, but it's been this kind of fun thing of like, I'm getting there. Like everyone I make is a little better.
What's so funny to me is that people are just, it's that whole fear of failure.
Yeah.
You know, it's like you have to
be willing to fail.
You have to be willing to fuck up. You know, like I was playing around with, I got into making like jellies once, and like I was making orange and grapefruit marmalades a lot. And then I was like, I'm going to make a new one. I'm going to do like a key lime and cilantro marmalade, which sounds really good, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, Jerry came in, and he was the first person. He like took a taste of it. He's like, oh my God, it's like licking a Tylenol. And I'm like, yeah, it was horrible. You know, so I'm like, all right, so that goes out.
Yeah.
You know, you have to, it's okay to fail. And I think part of it is too, when it's like, oh, it's the family dinner, you know, like you don't want to mess it up, but you don't have to get real complicated with it to try different things.
Yeah.
And also to have, my whole deal too is that I have this fantastic professor at Northwestern named Dwight Conkergood, who taught this performance in everyday life class. And this man, he looked like a suburban housewife. He spent 3 years in a Laotian refugee camp.
Oh my God.
Yeah, like just observing the culture. He moved into the Big Red Tenement in Chicago and lived among like some of the biggest gangbangers ever. And he just, it was all about seeing the culture. And the one thing that united everybody was food. Oh. And he had this wonderful phrase that just kind of just rang with me. And it's, food is not feed. Mm. It's not just there to, you know, give us this fuel and for us to just shovel down. It's a community experience. It's a personal experience. Mm. It's about your history. It's mm-hmm. about sharing a moment. And it's about telling your story. And that's, to me, that's why I love cooking so much, is because mm-hmm. it really is another creative expression of yourself mm-hmm. and of like who you are and how you eat. I've even I've been doing this horrible toxin cleanse. It's not horrible. It's not one of these all liquid
Martha
diets.
Stewart.
It's a Martha Stewart cleanse. So, you know, it's based in Connecticut.
Yes. How horrible can it be?
It is, really. So, yeah.
She even went to prison. It wasn't that horrible.
And she crocheted everybody little smocks.
Yes. It's great.
So, yeah. So I'm standing around in my little crocheted shawl and eating twigs and berries. But because of this, a friend of mine in New York, Nicole Burley, who is starting, she's doing a whole self-help, she's a life coach. She's asked me to do healthy recipes for Meatless Monday. So I'm going to be on NicoleBurley.com starting in late February on Mondays, offering meatless and healthy alternatives to food.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, so the whole thing is like, it's also the blog. Some of it is pretty humorous, I think.
You are hilarious. I mean, you wrote a whole episode this summer when you were hanging out with me and lesbians in the backyard.
All the lesbians eating twigs and
like
salsa.
Like Ina Garten.
Why do lesbians like salsa so much?
I don't know.
It's a universal truth.
It is true.
They love salsa and they all have bad knees.
Yes. My first girlfriend, who you know, used to say that if every lesbian bar would just serve salsa and chips for free at the counter, none of them would go under.
It's true.
But no one's ever done that.
I know, they just need to, because lesbians love salsa.
They do.
I don't know why.
We don't think we had salsa
that night,
did we? We
should ask Cynthia Nixon if she likes salsa.
I don't know. That would be our limit.
She might not. I choose to have salsa today, but I choose to have guacamole tomorrow. I'm Cynthia Nixon. It's my choice.
It's my choice.
Ah!
It's my healthy choice. And then she gets a whole campaign with
whole
healthy
campaign
choice.
Going on, healthy
it's
choice.
Great. I hope they give us some sponsorship money. Well, check out the Improvised Chef, and Scott will keep you. We'll have that linked in our show notes. But really, there's some fantastic recipes on there. He's very pithy and very funny and very current with what's going on in his life.
Coming in February, I'll be done with this whole little
cleanse
thing. So I'll be putting good food back up there.
and he's adorable, adorable, adorable. So hopefully he'll be back here on the couch with me a lot in the upcoming months. But I'm just glad we got to start talking about food. I have another chef that I would like to get on the couch too and talk with as well, who you know, Elena Reagan. She's doing some underground diving and the scavenger, going out and finding her little shrooms.
The forager. The scavenger sounds like she's picking up roadkill.
Right, exactly. He's a forager. But there is a way to talk about food, and there are a lot of real innovators and everyday people, in our GLBT community who are leading the way with food. So
absolutely.
It's great to talk with you about it.
Thank you.
Everybody, I hope you have a great week, and I'll talk to you next time when I think we have Lily Tomlin on this show. So
ooh.
She's awesome.
I love her.
Love her.
Love her.
Thanks for listening to another Windy City Queercast. Special thanks to our Queercast family, Kirk Williamson, newscaster, and Di Sturkey, production editor. I'm Amy Matheny, your host. Please comment on our shows at WindyCityQueercast.com and iTunes. The next Queercast is only days away, so don't miss it. Subscribe today. Windy City Queercast, queer and now.